Welcome, everyone. First of all, thank you all so much for coming. It's a pleasure to see some of you and to see some names on the screen. It's a big honor for me to be able to speak about Rabbi Sacks, and I appreciate the opportunity to have to have had a chance myself to work through his writings again and to reflect on him and read some eulogies for him. And I'm very excited to share some reflections with you and to learn a little bit from him together. I'm sure all of you, like myself, when we heard about the passing of Rabbi Sacks, it was very sudden. You know, we heard he had cancer a few weeks beforehand, but it was just very quick. We didn't know the severity. And I think still now, many, and you know, I'd include myself in this group, it's still kind of challenging for me to think about him in past tense, because knowing he was around and having his presence in the Jewish world meant so much to me and to the entire Jewish people. And while that's certainly the case, and it's very shocking still and painful, I think it's incumbent upon us to try to reflect upon his life and to try to gain something from his teachings and his values and who he was really as a person. And so that's what I want to do tonight with you, and to spend some time together learning about this wonderful, very successful, and truly transcendent individual. Let me share my screen. If at any point something technologically goes wrong, someone just please let me know. So we'll start here. Let's take a step back all the way to the beginning. So the topic of tonight is a tribute to Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, seven lessons from his life and teachings. And the reason why I chose seven is because recently I heard a lecture from Rabbi Sacks, and his lecture was seven, I think, principles of happiness. They said that the reason why he did seven was because ever since the time of Stephen Covey, seven has been a very special number, mind you, from the time of Genesis chapter one. So in this vein, I also chose to do seven lessons. And if anyone is interested, I'm happy to share the slides of this presentation afterwards. Part of my idea was to provide some resources here for further reading in the future. So the first thing I wanted to share with you was a tweet, actually, from one of my rabbeim, Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz, who's a very popular rabbi, actually, from the Five Towns, from North Woodmere. And I believe what's wrote, in a very succinct fashion, something I think is very true. And he wrote that while the tributes and hespedim for Rabbi Lord Sacks have been beautiful and eloquent, most of us find ourselves much more drawn to Rabbi Sacks' own lectures and writings than to those that are about him. Meaning Rabbi Sacks' writing and his presentation and style are so unique and so profound that, you know, to read those is kind of, you know, much more compelling than just to read about him, because you get a really good sense of him from his writings. And, in that sense, it kind of hurts my standing here tonight, because I'm not him or his writings. But what I want to do is I want to combine some reflections of my own and from others alongside his actual teachings and his writings, and put those together for these seven lessons that we're going to try to take from him tonight. And I do think that this dichotomy I set up of seven lessons from his life and teachings is actually not fully accurate, because this dichotomy of Rabbi Sacks' life and his teachings, the more I've reviewed his writings, the more I've seen how it's just not true. Because Rabbi Sacks, both of them, both the teachings and the way he lived his life, it was one and the same. It was this very holistic personality. And it was really very special when I'm reading eulogies about, oh, this is what Rabbi Sacks did with his life. And then to see it in print, Rabbi Sacks writing about how this is such an important value, it actually tells you a lot about the person. And I want to demonstrate that to you tonight by putting some reflections alongside his own writings and quotes, and you'll see the two together. So I had the opportunity to hear from Rabbi Sacks on four occasions. And I actually spent a little time this week tracking down the four flyers from those four events, as you can see here. The one on the top right is my brother-in-law made. It's not as good as the other one, so I'll mess with him a little bit about it later. But I got to hear Rabbi Sacks four times. And there was a certain feeling I had when I listened to Rabbi Sacks that I remember after I first heard him on a Shabbos at Yeshiva University, I remember telling my mother about it. And what I said to her was, that when I heard Rabbi Sacks speak, I felt a sense of confidence about being part of the Jewish people. I felt optimistic about the future of the Jewish people. And I felt hope. I felt a sense of hope. And, you know, what's fascinating is that sometimes you hear somebody speak and you get a certain impression, and then you hear somebody else reflecting on what they heard, and they get a different sense. But I think that this feeling of just a sense of optimism, a sense of hope, feeling positive about the Jewish future and feeling proud of being a Jew was a very common experience when someone heard Rabbi Sacks. And, you know, Rabbi Hain, when he gave his drasha on the week after Rabbi Sacks' passing, Rabbi Hain obviously had a much closer relationship with Rabbi Sacks than myself. But on one occasion, I actually had a very close experience with Rabbi Sacks. He came to YU on the bottom right here. He gave a lecture for YU's Kol Yom Rishon. And what they did is the Center for the Jewish Future reached out to me and they said, we want you to be the greeter for Rabbi Sacks. When he comes, we want you to meet him, to take him to an office, to show him around, to basically prepare him for before when he speaks. And, you know, I did that. So the days before I prepared, I was rereading some of the books that I've read of his. You know, I was all prepared to ask him questions. And I get there on that Sunday, and the sort of my boss for that day says to me, says, don't bother him. Don't ask him for pictures. Don't really try to talk to him, or, you know, he needs to sit there and prepare. He gets bothered by a lot of people. You know, give him some space when he comes. So that was a little disappointing for me. And it's funny because that person in the end actually asked Rabbi Sacks if he could take a selfie with him. So I thought he wasn't maybe as consistent. But I remember when Rabbi Sacks came, he was very, very menschlich to me. Then he came, he asked me who I was, you know, how I'm doing. He was very, very, very nice and polite. And, you know, I remember whenever I got him a notepad, I got him some coffee. He was a very, very nice person. And that struck me. And I think others have reflected on this as well. So those are my own experiences with Rabbi Sacks. But I do think that they're not only reflective of my own, but they're the experiences a lot of people have had. And with that being said, I want to, before we get into the seven lessons that we'll go through together, and please feel free to chime in at any point with comments, questions, you could write it in the chat. I want to go through a little bit about who Rabbi Sacks was, not, you know, his biography, which you could read on Wikipedia, but just a little bit of a sense of who he was before we get into the lessons. So Rabbi Sacks famously had a lot of accomplishments. He had the honor and distinction of serving as a chief rabbi of the United Kingdom for 23 years. And when he retired, it was because he was going on to actually greater things and wanted to make a much more universal impact, even outside of the United Kingdom. He published more than 25 books and many, many substantive articles, both in popular publications, some more academic. He won the Templeton Prize in 2016. The Templeton Prize, as Rabbi Dr. Meir Soloveitchik once put it, it's basically the Nobel Prize in religion, but it's not the, you know, a Nobel Prize that you get, anyone just gets, like the Nobel Peace Prize. This one you really have to earn. So this is, that's how Rabbi Soloveitchik put it. So he won the Templeton Prize in 2016, which was a tremendous, tremendous honor. He was made a life peer in the House of Lords in 2009, and he's the only recipient of the Norman Lamb Prize in 2010. And you could see on the top right over here, a picture of Rabbi Lamb and Rabbi Sacks together, which I think is kind of poignant. Both of them represented, you know, Rabbi Lamb here in America, Rabbi Sacks, you know, in England, represented world Jewry. And, you know, both of them having passed this year is very painful. And it's very poignant to see the two of them together. The next thing is, you know, just a little bit about Rabbi Sacks's talents. I know for anyone who's heard him speak, they probably have seen this or experienced this. But just a few points of reminder about Rabbi Sacks. If you ever heard Rabbi Sacks speak, to quote Dr. Samuel Leibens in the Bolded Part, he said, then you know what malchus majesty really is. It was transcendent. As he writes, to hear Rabbi Sacks speak was sometimes to feel oneself vividly in the presence of something supernatural. It was unbelievable to hear Rabbi Sacks speak. It was surreal. The only other person I've heard speak and I've just been, you know, how does a human being speak at this level? Is Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who in a different way was also like this. It's just the type of language he would use and how he put it together was remarkable. But you really felt a sense of majesty when you were in front of Rabbi Sacks, and I think everyone in the audience felt the same way. But it wasn't just his oratory skills, it was also his writing. His prose, as Dr. David Schatz, who is the editor of Torah Umada Journal and an excellent writer himself, you know, his prose was remarkable, with elegant sentences, often short and pithy, replete with wonderful turns of phrase and bon mots. He made readers as riveted by his writing as by his oratory. If you read, I actually edited an article of his one time. I made very limited edits. It's just incredible, incredible writing. And finally, another important aspect of Rabbi Sacks's writing and speaking, writing and speeches was he quoted in a tremendous range of sources, of course, from Jewish sources, but he integrated a lot together. Rabbi Chaim Strauchler, one of the editors of Tradition, wrote, if you take a look, he was awed by his ability to integrate so many disparate sources. He reached deeply into classical contemporary writers on philosophy, politics, society, psychology, ethics, economics, and sociology. Rabbi Sacks integrated all of these into these brilliant books. And just, you know, he had so much information packed in, and he was a tremendous reader. And this really comes out in all of his writings and speeches. Finally, before we get into the lessons, I just think it was very important to point out who Rabbi Sacks's mentors were. Rabbi Sacks, I think, points to very often three people who just totally changed his life. Rabbi Nachum Rabinovich, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who was a Rosh Yeshiva in London, and then later a Rosh Yeshiva Malei Adumim at one of the most prominent Hezder Yeshiva in Israel. Rabbi Sacks deemed him his Rebbe. He said having him as a Rebbe was one of the greatest blessings of his life. Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, the Rav. Rabbi Sacks only met him once, actually. He met him once, I think, for an hour. But it was one of the most striking experiences of his entire life. And the Rav's teachings and writings, Rabbi Sacks constantly returned to throughout his career. And finally, the Lubavitcher Rebbe. It's not blown up enough here to fully see it. But the picture of the Lubavitcher Rebbe here, the third from the right, is actually a picture from a book, which is a book of an English translation of some of the Lubavitcher Rebbe speeches. And Rabbi Sacks actually adapted it. Rabbi Sacks was involved in the publication of the Rebbe's stuff. And what drew Rabbi Sacks to these people? So he said that they were all individuals who stood out against the consensus of their contemporaries. They weren't just classical Talmidei Chachamim, Torah scholars. You know, two of them had PhDs, Rabbi Soloveitchik and Rabbi Rabinovich. Rabbi Schneerson, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, was very much engaged with the world. And he says that these were immensely inspiring figures. This is a quote from Rabbi Sacks. But what struck me most about them was the depth of their commitment to real engagement with the world. And there's a video my father-in-law pointed out to me, which is Rabbi Sacks speaking at the Chabad Shluchim's convention. It is really worth your while to watch that video. You can find it online easily. If not, I'll send you the slides, and this is the link. But now we get into the first of our seven lessons. And this is, I think, the most important one, actually, of all the lessons we're going to learn tonight. The first is, in your life, you need to care, and you have to care enough to make changes in your life and in the world. Rabbi Sacks, in his first Kol Nidre Drasha, opened with the following. He said, "My friends, you've all heard of light bulb jokes. You know, how many people does it take to fix this light bulb, and so on and so forth." And he says, "You've all definitely heard of this light bulb joke. How many therapists does it take to change a light bulb? He says, "Come on, you can all recite the answer along with me. One, but the light bulb has got to want to change." This is his first Kol Nidre Drasha as a chief rabbi. And as someone, a student of Rabbi Sacks's reflected, he said, everyone laughed. But his message that night was that on Yom Kippur, you can change, but you have to want to change. You have to have this desire to change, to improve. And he says that this first line of his Kol Nidre sermon was actually a description of Rabbi Sacks himself. And I think this is very much on point. you know, if you learn about Rabbi Sacks did not grow up despite his being, the chief rabbi of England, Rabbi Sacks did not grow up as a, as a Orthodox Jew in the sense that many of us grew up in, or many of us are familiar with. Rabbi Sacks grew up in a much more traditional home. And he didn't have the formal, chinuch training that, many nowadays are privileged to have. And it was really in his 20s where he really had this massive transition to becoming the type of scholar and devout Jew that he was. And Rabbi Sacks, this I think characterized him beautifully, that he was someone who wanted to change, wanted to improve, and wanted to seek out meaning. And to give just a few examples of this, he says in one of his books, in his farewell address from the chief rabbinate, he says, "The question that haunted me then," this was during his time in Cambridge when he was studying for his master's and PhD, says, "The question that haunted me then and in one form or another has done so ever since was, where were the missing Jews? The 85%. We who frequented the shul estimated that there were in the region of 1,000 Jewish students at the university. Of those, 100 had some contact with the Jewish society, perhaps another 50 who attended the Israel society. Where were the missing 85%? Why weren't they there?" This was Rabbi Sacks. This was the question he was haunted by for his entire career. Right? How do we get those missing Jews back? How do we attract them? Right. What's going on that they're not connecting to Judaism? And this is something he cared about and was very purposeful in trying to resolve this question and answer this question during his lifetime. I think another very profound aspect of Rabbi Sacks is that in 1968, he went to America to meet as many rabbis as he could to understand the Jewish situation of our time. He sensed he wanted more. He had this question, where are all these missing Jews? He wanted more he could have been this tremendous continental philosopher, Rabbi Sacks. Incredible knowledge of philosophy, extremely talented, as we know, could have gone into that discipline, never heard of him as a rabbi, would have had an extremely successful career. But Rabbi Sacks wanted more. He sensed there was more out there, more meaning to pursue. And therefore, he goes to America, and he wanted to meet as many rabbis as he could to understand the Jewish situation. And he met with a few rabbis. Perhaps the most important are Rabbi Soloveitchik and Rabbi Lubavitcher Rebbe. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe meeting, changed Rabbi Sacks, and I think should change all of us. He said, Rabbi Sacks, the Lubavitcher Rebbe basically asked Rabbi Sacks, what's going on in Cambridge? How many people are engaged in Jewish life? And Rabbi Sacks told him about 10%. The Rebbe said to him, what are you going to do about this? And Rabbi Sacks repeats the story all over the place. And Rabbi Sacks says, in the situation which I find myself. But the Rebbe let the sentence go on no further. This is what he said. You do not find yourself in a situation, he said. You put yourself in one. And if you put yourself in one situation, you can put yourself in another. And what Rabbi Sacks was being challenged to do was to act, to really make an impact on this. Not just, this is the situation, but how do I make this change? Right? How do I do something to rectify what's wrong in this area? And then as someone describing Rabbi Sacks wrote, he said, thus, over the next 5 decades, Rabbi Sacks, simply put, has changed the situation. I think this comes up all the times in Rabbi Sacks' writings. That you have one life to live. You have one bite of the apple. What are you going to do with it, right? You have to have this desire to change, to make your life meaningful, to improve. He writes about use your time well. Life is short, too short to waste on television, games, emails. He says, any day which you have done something good to someone else has not been wasted. He writes, discover meaning, right? Think about, why am I here? Introspect, find meaning. How can I actually impact the world in a positive way? Right, reflect on what are you doing here? And this is Rabbi Sacks, this idea that our lives need to have meaning, to be pursuing meaning. And that is the goal of our existence here. And I think Rabbi Sacks, this idea of having this need to this desire to change, to care. That's the first lesson of Rabbi Sacks' life, his legacy and his teachings. The second is something I found very, it dovetailed nicely with my experience, but I thought it was remarkable. Rabbi Sacks was a tremendous mensch. There's this story, he went to another shul, and Rabbi Sacks apparently was a vegetarian. And so they said to the family hosting him, you know, don't give him any meat food. But Ray Saxon, he was there, he says to the wife, is there no challen today? He asked, looking perplexed, and Sabine hesitated. She said, it's not vegetarian. He paused and then said, Sabine, how can I come to your house and not eat your challen? And, you know, this is kind of a very simple story. And maybe it's, you know, because I met Rabbi Sacks a little bit, I get why this is so special. But it's just this, he had this way about him that was just very pleasant and made you feel comfortable. And I think, you know, every time I saw him speak and interact with a crowd and individual, he just had this way of being, making everyone around him feel, you know, comfortable and happy, and he was being warm to them. And I think this is true just as a whole. Rabbi Sacks was such a mensch. And when you read about the tributes to him, Rabbi Sacks, this keeps coming up. Rabbi Sacks was a mensch. He said his employees, they wrote a joint tribute to him. They wrote, it was because above and beyond anything else, any titles he had held, books he wrote, or awards he won, he was simply a mensch. Rabbi J. Schachter told the story that someone had called Rabbi Schachter and said to him, and he actually was dying, he said, can you put me in touch with Rabbi Sacks? I've read all his books. I love him. I'd love to just speak to him for a few minutes. Rabbi J.J. Schachter called Rabbi Sacks, and he asked him if he would do it. And Rabbi Sacks said yes. And he calls this guy, this sick elderly man, and he calls him. He starts speaking to him, and the call is dropped. The connection isn't very good. So Rabbi Sacks calls again and starts speaking to him again. And they're having a conversation, and the call is dropped. So this is the chief rabbi of England calling some random person, spending more than a few minutes with him. The call keeps dropping, many things to do. What does he do? Keeps calling until they finish their conversation. The call isn't dropped again. Now, this is someone who wrote over close to 30 books, led an entire country, I think was the greatest theologian potentially of our age in the Jewish world. You know, willing to call again and again. I think that's very, very important, that whatever, you know, however big you become, always to be a mensch, always to make sure to not lose sight of being, you know, a friendly, caring individual, not full of yourself. Now, they say he used to reach out to students. He used to get back to emails to them, to people he didn't really even know well. And, you know, you see just the amount of impact he had. You know, not, you know, he could have just stayed in the base medrash or stayed in the library and written and given lofty sermons, but he was involved with many people. Said, away from the limelight, he gave so many individuals, groups, rabbanim organizations, you know, precious time. He called his employees said that when someone in their family had a trauma, he was the person who called them. Then he called later to check in, and again an hour after that to check in. One rabbi shared that when his father passed away, the very first phone call he got after returning from the cemetery was Rabbi Sacks. And what's fascinating, and Yair Rosenberg, a popular writer, and Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg both made this point. So Rabbi Sacks, actually by nature, was not one of these very extroverted individuals, very friendly and loud person. That was something he actually had to work on, and that was something he made sure to try to help others. It worked to free Agunot, resolve conflicts, advocating for the Jewish people. You know, this is a man who focused a lot on being a mensch, on making sure that he never got too full of himself. And to be there for many people who, you know, it could have been understandable that he wouldn't have spent time trying to help. That's lesson number two. You know, no matter how big we get, no matter what we're doing, we always have to remember to be mensch, to be a mensch. There's no excuse to not be. A third theme I wanted to raise, and this is perhaps is a more narrow one, but for Rabbi Sacks, it actually wasn't, which is, you know, very often, great rabbinic leaders, you know, they say there are some midrashim that describe Moshe Rabbeinu in this vein, that, you know, they're so busy with the world, they don't have time for their family. And this certainly wasn't the case for Rabbi Sacks. And in Rabbi Sacks' teachings and writings, family was a tremendous, tremendous matter for him. It was the utmost importance. In a letter, he writes, a fictional letter, he writes about children. He said, they are the joy of our life as of yours. He says, "It's having children is more than a gift, it's a responsibility. For us as Jews, it's the most sacred responsibility there is. He writes, spend time with your family. Keep Shabbos. Happy marriages and families need dedicated time. Invest in family. Family is important. It's not always something. No, family is critical. Spend time with them. Invest in family. And Rabbi Ephraim Mervis, who's the current chief rabbi of England, a very special individual, wrote about Rabbi Sacks that we have this paradigm of Yaakov Avinu. Jacob was also called Yisrael, Israel. And Yaakov represents the family man, while Yisrael, Israel, symbolizes his leadership of our people. And we're called B'nai Yisrael. And Rabbi Sacks used to speak about how we have both. You need to be a Yaakov, you need to be a family person, and you also have to be Yisrael, right? Rabbinic leaders are both community leaders and family members. And Rabbi Mervis wrote that he himself lived up admirably to this aspiration. I said before that one video I really recommend watching is his speech at the Shluchim Convention. But another one I really recommend is his daughter's eulogy. Bring your handkerchief. It's very moving. His daughter Gila Sass, she spoke at the funeral. And she spoke about, what he meant to her as a father. He was someone invested in family. And he writes about this and he lived his life that way. And here you see again how it's not too, Rabbi Sacks didn't write about something and then in his own life, had nothing to do with that. He lived and embodied those very values he advocated for and that he promoted. Over and over again, you see this. When people talk about, his life, you just see over and over again, oh, this is what he writes about here. This is what he writes about there. And this is what he argues Judaism stands for. It's very special. Now to go to some broader lessons from Rabbi Sacks' writing, to step out of, some of these more individual points, but to kind of take a step back into Rabbi Sacks' more a general, let's say, theology or philosophy. Rabbi Sacks was an extremely insistent advocate for making sure you're proud of being Jewish. You have to show to everyone, to show it especially to your children, to your family, that you have pride, that you're a Jew, right? And this happens over and over again. And so much of his writings is trying to make the case that we have to be proud of the fact that we're Jewish. He speaks about how we're the heirs of the greatest heritage ever conferred upon a people. Never doubt that it's a privilege to be a Jew. Head for head, our people have done more to transform the world than any other. There are easier ways to live, but none more challenging. God asks great things of our people. That's what made our people great. Judaism is as relevant today as it ever was. These are all quotes compiled from the different writings of Rabbi Sacks. He returns to this over and over again. This is an extremely significant part of Rabbi Sacks' philosophy and legacy, which is he wanted people to feel proud of being Jews, to realize that our tradition is unique, has so much to give to the world. It's Moshe Emes, Toraso Emes, Moshe's Torah is true, and it's always going to be true. We have to feel proud of the fact that we're Jews, never to have our heads down because, we're Jews. Why is this so important to Rabbi Sacks' philosophy? I'd like to explain to you why. Rabbi Sacks believed that one of the reasons for the high rates of assimilation in Jewish life, and this was something that bothered him tremendously, is that there were many generations of Jews who were ambivalent about being Jewish. He says, I don't pass judgment on them, neither should you. People who lived between the 1880s and 1930s lived in an age of anti-Semitism, then the Holocaust, right? He said, who would blame anyone in those days for saying that Judaism isn't a religion, it's a misfortune? Then he writes this, but we are long past those days. One of the greatest gifts you can give your children is to let them see you carry your identity with pride. Basically, Rabbi Sacks believed that part of the reason many Jews were, not on the path of religiosity and were not associated or affiliated Jews was because they didn't feel a sense of pride about it. People didn't demonstrate that Judaism is something to be proud about. And this is something Rabbi Sacks insisted upon. And Gary Rosenblatt, the editor, or I think former editor of the Jewish Week, wrote that, the chief rabbi's overall message was that despite the frightening times we live in and the threat of a nuclear Iran and a rise of anti-Israel and anti-Jewish sentiment in Europe, the Jewish people will continue to thrive if we maintain a sense of our pride and develop a sense of optimism. That's lesson number four. We have to be proud to be Jews and to share that with others and to speak about the value and the how unique our tradition is. To transition to lesson number five. Menachem Butler, who's this public intellectual at this point, wrote a tweet about Rabbi Sacks, and really I wanted to utilize the last line, which I thought he put very well. He wrote, "Teacher of Judaism to the world, including to the Jewish community." Rabbi Sacks taught Judaism to the entire world. He made a point of that, and I'm going to get into that later. But Rabbi Sacks believed that Judaism's lessons and ideas had to be made public and had to try to be put into the public arena of discussion to impact and benefit the world. So I thought this is a good way of putting it. But he felt that we're in a unique time, not to get into the different paradigms, but he thought that there are really three different ways of approaching Judaism, or Jews approach the world nowadays. One is segregation, right? One is to become a Haredi community, as he writes, to totally distance yourself from society. Another type is to basically, totally abandon your Judaism. Right? That was the second type. And those were basically the two models. They said that this is not the way our Judaism should be. He said a Jewish identity, being proud to be Jewish, but proud equally to be an active citizen of the wider society, he said that was waning. And this is what Rabbi Sacks over and over again advocated for. He said that, it used to be that either you had to segregate yourself, have nothing to do with the world. The world is a dark place. We have nothing to do with it. Don't want to share Judaism. That's it. So that was it for one time. So if you experience anti-Semitism, you'd understand that. But he says that's not the case nowadays. So the Jewish situation has changed. Right? We have Israel. We have a home. Jews are not, this conspicuous minority. We have, we're respected. So we have to provide the values of Judaism to the world to shape the discussions, to try to change the sense of morality in the world. We have so much to contribute. We can't be ashamed of that. We have to try to help civilization with our ideas. Right? He says the idea of Judaism is to be true to your faith and a blessing to others regardless of their faith. And you'll see this again. So much of this comes up again and again in Rabbi Sacks' writings. And if you open one of his books, you'll see these lines. It says, the voice of Torah is the moral voice of Western civilization. Right? Love your neighbor as yourself. Love the stranger for you are once strangers. Right? Seek justice. Walk humbly. Love mercy. Right? Jews stood up for the powerless. I think this is connected to the previous lesson, that we have to be proud of who we are and proud of our tradition and what we can contribute, and also to make that contribution. We're capable of making that contribution. And they say that Rabbi Sacks wasn't just a rabbi for the Jews, he was a rabbi for all of England. I think they meant by that was that Rabbi Sacks really, he taught Judaism because he felt that our values and our ideas and our system could make an extremely valuable contribution to the outside world. And this is something he felt that needed to change in our society. It still hasn't changed in the way that he would like. And something, perhaps we should consider and try to continue to strive for. And I think that this idea that when we think about issues and values in our world, issues and challenges in our world, what values do we bring to the table? I think sometimes we only look at it through a type of secular lens. And we don't think about, what does our tradition say about, refugees or about economy and, the difference between, what about how to engage with poor people and all these different areas. How does Judaism think about it? What insights can Judaism bring to the table, right? And also what wisdom from the world can we take into Judaism to have us have a better sense of our own tradition? What other things in the world could we benefit from? So he said that this is what he tried to do during his time in the chief rabbinate, and he found that you can do all these things. You can contribute to the world from Torah. And he said that he was able, each case, the answer was yes. Yes, you can do all of these things. That's lesson number five. Lesson number six. There's something amazing about Rabbi Sacks. I'd like to just highlight it with one sentence. Rabbi Sacks wrote about this idea that we need to show how beautiful Judaism is to the world. He said that this is really important for young Jews. And this is just an example of a broader point I'm about to make. He said that the young Jews are not inspired by a Judaism that speaks constantly of anti-Semitism, the Holocaust, isolation of Israel, and the politics of fear. I mean, this caused a lot of people to identify with Judaism. Not true anymore. Nor are they inspired by a Judaism that asks them to look down on and sever all contacts with the world. Jews are in the forefront of almost every endeavor today. He says how transformative it would be if they did so as Jews, ambassadors of the divine presence, living Jewish lives, energized by Jewish texts, sustained by Jewish prayers, driven to share our legacy of hope. I said it would be the greatest Kiddush Hashem, sanctification of God's name in history. Basically, Rabbi Sacks understood that the model for our Jewish community needs to adjust to the times, right? How we attract people, how we get young Jews to connect. We need to understand the current state of those individuals in order to bring them in. And this is just an example of that. But what is perhaps more important is how this manifested in Rabbi Sacks' life. If you read Rabbi Sacks' material, it's astonishing, his range. Rabbi Sacks wrote in 1973, basically a response to one of the most important books of theology in the 20th century. This is when he was probably about 30 years old. And this is a book, The Lonely Man of Faith, written by Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. Rabbi Sacks basically critiques it and makes a very fascinating, thoughtful, provocative take on this article. And it's you know, amazing to see someone at that age write at that level. And then he takes, you know, 15 years later, the hardest book of Rav Soloveitchik, and provides a review essay of it, explains it. I benefited from that essay numerous times about the book of the Halachic Mind. You see his ability to write about the most complex philosophical ideas, you know, at a level that very few can understand. That's one level of Rabbi Sacks. But then Rabbi Sacks had another level of the type of issue he addressed. He talked about anti-Semitism. He talked about how can it be that people kill others because they say, oh, you know, this is what religion wants from us. And that's what God wants from us. He talked about how do we have faith after the Holocaust? Right? Not these necessarily philosophical issues that stand on their own, but you know, obviously connected to it, but raging contemporary issues of our day, of how to think about these very important topics. And this is much more relevant. Right? That's the second level of Rabbi Sacks. But then there was another level, right? And this is the idea of him connecting to all, trying to impact everyone and try to help everyone. So he also spoke about things like the seven principles of happiness. Rabbi Sacks spoke about, you know, what does it mean to have a Jewish family? What does it mean to pray? What does it mean to, you know, to give thanks to others? How do you live a meaningful life? But he spoke about all these topics and ideas, and that's very unique. To have someone who can straddle both sides of the fence on such extremes is so critical to understanding who Rabbi Sacks was. And this isn't just true in terms of the topics he addressed. It was the type of media he used. Rabbi Sacks, you know, spoke on the BBC. Rabbi Sacks made YouTube videos, black and white YouTube videos with drawings and comics. Rabbi Sacks had WhatsApp groups where he would speak for a few minutes and they would share it with 20,000 people. I'm a member of one. Rabbi Sacks had Covenant in Conversation. He had family editions. Rabbi Sacks tried to reach everyone. And he understood and he realized that the way to reach Jews is not necessarily the way you reached them 100 years ago. You have to be open to trying new methods. Jews and people need different ways of connecting. And that's what Rabbi Sacks sought to do. And I think that this is also a key lesson, right? Sometimes, you know, we're on our high horses, you know, only do this or that. You know, it's hard for us to relate to being the chief rabbi. But can you imagine the chief rabbi who's written about the greatest works to publish in a lowly, you know, a British newspaper? But he did, because he wanted to write about anti-Semitism. He wanted to impact people. He wanted to be accessible. And that's what Rabbi Sacks did. And that's, you know, for all of us, right? We have to be open to thinking about it, how to connect in different ways, try to help the next generation, and to, you know, to not be on our high horse, so to speak. Finally, to conclude with the seventh lesson from tonight, and that is the dignity of difference. And this is a topic in Rabbi Sacks that's, yeah, just absolutely essential to his philosophy of Judaism and of life, really. And basically, Rabbi Sacks argued that there's so much to gain from others, from other religions, from others with different perspectives. And not only can we gain from them, but we need them, right? No one has all the virtues. And he says, you know, you need friends because Moshe even needed an Aaron to have teams, to have partnership. This is true on a very local level. This is true within Judaism, the different sects of Judaism. And he also meant this about religions. And he got into trouble for that. Right? People critiqued him for that very harshly. Rabbi Sacks felt that we have to learn from others. Right? Everyone has what to contribute. Everyone has, you know, a piece of the truth. Right? The more diverse we are, the richer our culture becomes. And he says that this is what the essence of Judaism is. Right? Judaism always was that divergent opinion, to challenge the taken-for-granted assumptions of our time. that's what Judaism is to not just stay in your bubble, but it's also to hear other arguments, try to gain from others and realize we don't have, you know, the only truth. Other people also have what to contribute. And he says, you know, this line, Jews were different. They are still different. Judaism is about the dignity of difference. You know, the majority is not always right, nor is conventional wisdom always wise. Right? Every Sachs believes you have to be open to others. And David Schatz summed this up so well in just the final minute or two of our presentation. He writes that readers do not always agree with Rabbi Sachs's views and arguments. He at times endured strident criticism, whether from the left or from the right. But this is exactly what his philosophy urges us to welcome. Conversation, disagreement, and difference, albeit decidedly without the stridency. This is what Rabbi Sachs stood for, to appreciate others, to appreciate other views and arguments, try to get outside of your bubble a little bit, which is so critical in our current polarized society, and to appreciate what others have to offer, to be respectful and to be thoughtful. And just one modern manifestation of this is, you know, safe spaces. We don't bring anyone else in who doesn't, you know, have our views, who might be a different view that's offensive to us. Said, no, right? He says, I have the exact opposite definition of a safe space, not mocking, but challenging, listening respectfully, right? You should listen to views opposed to your own because you know that the people opposed to you will listen respectfully to you. That's what Rabbi Sachs stood for. And these are these seven lessons: caring to make change, remember to be a mensch, the importance of family and friends, pride in being Jewish, Judaism's role in the world, scope of influence, right? Use different methods to reach Jews, and the dignity of difference, other religions, and people of dissenting opinions. Finally, in our last minute here, you know, it's hard to think of Rabbi Sachs in the past tense. And Rabbi Mervis wrote, though, that in reality, he will never exist in the past tense because he will provide insight and inspiration for many years to come. Right, a legacy which will highlight the relevance of our Torah tradition in modern times, a legacy that will enshrine the respectful place of religion within our ever-changing world. And that should be a comfort for us because Rabbi Sachs will always be with us. All of his writings and teachings and lectures will always be there for us to benefit from. And finally, to end with this quote, mortality is written into the human condition, but so too is the possibility of immortality. In the good we do that continues long after we are here to beget further good. There are lives that defeat death and redeem existence from tragedy. We knew that day that we had known one of them. That's from Rabbi Sachs about another individual. But we can say with full confidence that this is true about Rabbi Laura Jonathan Sachs, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, as well. And if anyone wants, I'm happy to share the slides and share some further resources for some more study and research into Rabbi Sachs' life and teachings. And I thank everyone for coming. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. And I look forward to continuing.